We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. We start the show with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Collins Warren. Then I interview Super Tall Paul and play several of his tunes. And later in the show, a story by May Chandran. The Passionistas Project produced this recording. For more information, go to thepassionistasproject.com. Stay tuned!
Henry Collins Warren had a stroke and died on Father's Day, June the 20th, 2021. He was 66 years old and recently widowed. He was a retired U.S. Navy helicopter pilot and flight instructor. I did not know Collins Warren at all. The last time I saw him was 50 years ago. I was in the music business and headed away from Georgia. He was 16 and living with his family in the aptly named Pitts, Georgia. Collins' mother, Maudie May, and my mother, Edna Lilly, were sisters, making him my first cousin. His mother, Maudie May Willis, married Henry Collins and had nine, count 'em, nine kids. Mary Alice, Charles, Durwood, Linda June, Carol Sue, Henry, Collins, Harry, Larry, and Nancy Gale. Nine kids. All the girls had double names. It was a family thing. They came close to getting the dozen discount. To say the Henry Collins family was poor would be a gross understatement. They did not have running water in their home. There was a well on the back porch and an outhouse in the backyard. I remember the well water being cool and sweet. The Sears catalog was put to good use in the outhouse. The house was heated by a series of fireplaces. This method of generating heat required a large wood pile in the backyard. Cooking was also done on a wood stove. Chopping wood was a boy chore. They did not have electricity in their home. Their home was beyond the end of the line. When the Rural Electrification Act made its way through Congress, the Henry Collins family got electricity for the first time. Light bulbs instead of lamps for reading, and a washing machine for the constant avalanche of dirty clothes from eight kids. Laundry with a machine with a wringer on the top was still a daunting task, but not like before. Not like the days of tubs, scrub boards, and water heated by fire. Their clothes were hand-me-downs, worn for sure, but always clean and pressed. Truth be told, the Henry Collins family didn't even own the house they lived in. They were, in essence, sharecroppers. They farmed the land for the landowner and split the income come harvest time. The house came with the job. The family ate breakfast and the evening meal, supper, together every day, no exceptions. They were a tight-knit group. To my knowledge, they never went hungry. Aunt Maudie made great biscuits. Aunt Maudie was a very religious woman. She never cut her hair and kept it up in a tight bun. She wore no makeup or jewelry other than her wedding ring. I remember as a child having a sleepover with Cousin Harry, and Aunt Maudie took me to Sunday evening services at some local church. I was accustomed to preachers working up a crowd, but about 45 minutes into the service, the man seated directly behind us jumped up and started speaking in tongues. Kolomoke, kolomoke, aka, maka, dumbu, or something like that. I had been almost dozing off until that happened. Aunt Maudie could see that I was terrified, and she put her right arm around me and pulled me in tight. I was safe. After the service ended, she told me that Mr. Crowder had gotten so worked up, he spoke in the old language to God. The family patriarch, Uncle Henry, farmed and did carpentry. He was a fine carpenter. He was also one of the best fishermen I ever drowned a worm with. I fish for fun. Henry fished for supper. There was no catch-and-release program in the Warren family. It was catch-and-eat. I've seen him haul some leviathans from the deep ponds of Turner County, Georgia. Here's the remarkable thing about this family. All of the kids, except Harry, who was killed in an automobile accident when he was a teenager, and Larry, who died as an infant, went to college, graduated, and became productive members of society. Charles and Mary Alice went to college on basketball scholarships. The others got scholarships and grants. They were all smart, and hard work was not foreign to them. Here's another remarkable thing. The only kids left alive today are the oldest, Mary Alice, and the youngest, Nancy Gale. Mary Alice is well-read and is somewhat of a liberal. Nancy Gale is a 100% gun-toting Trump supporter. Families are funny the way they turn out. I regret that I did not get to know Collins as an adult. Geography was against us. Time slipped by. I did take Nancy Gale and her husband to dinner the last time I was in Georgia. There was almost a riot in the restaurant. The Trump supporters and the socialists. The socialists got the check and left before I got shot. Families are funny the way they turn out.
Here we go. Super Tall Paul, August 4th, 2021. Mystic Pete Chronicles. Boom.
Boom. That's what's happening. That's what's happening now. It's what's happening now. That's a song we play at the Jive Joint. And we stop every couple minutes and go find out what's happening. We go out into the audience and have a little conversations and see what's going on in people's lives and what's actually happening right now. And then we'll go right back to it, because that's what's happening now. It's what's happening now.
It is August 3rd, 2021. Mystic Pete here with Super Tall Paul. Hi, Super Tall Paul.
Hi, Mystic Pete. It's very, very nice to be here with you. I've heard so much about you, and I feel like our names belong in headlines together.
Boom. Done. This is, by the end of 2012, it's going to be huge. We're going to be playing the Apollo and getting yanked off stage. No. I saw you perform last week at one of Star's events called
Illuminate Presents.
And you were fantastic. Incredible. I've seen you before. I've been a big fan for years. And I said, yeah, this guy's got to be on radio. Why don't you give us the short explanation of what you do, Super Tall Paul?
Sure. I am a world champion
looper, multi-instrumentalist, modern-day one-man band, vaudevillian, street performer, theatrical maniac. I'm the result of, if you make pushing into embarrassing situations a sport.
So you're just an entertainer.
I'm an entertainer. I'm constantly pushing the envelope of what entertains me by being as out there in my own experience of it and connecting with others, yes.
There's some people who walk on stage and you cannot take your eyes off them. You're one of those people. When you're up there, you just like, you could just be standing there and everybody has to look at you because you have that presence. Yeah, so when you say looper, you're creating live music. And yes. I saw you do some vocalizing and use a saxophone.
Yep. I had a flute, beatboxing. Yeah, like you said, harmonies. Then I was riding a unicycle while I was rocking out on the saxophone. Then I actually balanced the unicycle on my face. I try to have a rounded show. So I present the one-man band act with looping, but as part of an act instead of just being strictly a musician.
See, people can't see you, but you've heard of double chins. You actually have four chins. So the unicycle can go on. Uh-huh. And they're horizontal.
Yep.
Your amazing physique when it comes to chins. No. You can go to social media and search Super Tall Paul for all of his cavalcade of talents. Were you like the kid in third grade in the back of the class who was the class clown that teaches? Shut up!
Honestly, no. I was the quiet guy, shy, introvert, I am. That's why it's my choice to be an entertainer is contrary to my innate existence.
You're a shy guy.
I am a very shy guy, yeah.
At a party, so you're kind of in the back, but when you get on stage, mm-hmm. watch out.
Yeah, and I've been that way since the very first little talent show or whatever my parents let me be in. And that was a strange thing that was kind of incongruent with how I just was. I just turned alive when you put me on stage in front of people.
And the light turned on. And so what, in your teens or 20s, all this, the muse visited?
Absolutely. Yeah, I will say. The muse, I was already a multi-instrumentalist and recording myself as a one-man band with the hard disk recorders that were coming out at the time. It made it pretty easy for me to do pretty well with that. And I discovered such a thing as looping and just knew that's what I wanted to do. I was like, I want to do the one-man band stuff that I'm already doing, tracking and making songs, be a presentation. And as that evolved, I realized I had no way to afford the gear that would allow me to do this thing that I now know exists. I was living my life in very follow the flow of life, if you will. I'll just say a time for another time, the story, but it led me to the Marine Corps, and I did a term.
You're a Marine.
I'm a Marine, yep, I am.
A little different experience entertaining people and killing people.
I am very grateful that I was during a very rare time in our nation's history when we weren't at war. We had some conflict. I was on the ship. You remember when the USS Cole was bombed?
Attacked.
I was on the ship that was the nearest to it that went to its aid.
And you saved the people on the Cole.
I saved the Cole, yeah. Brought them on board, and yeah.
But you still had all that military training, and lots, there's a certain power to that.
It's just discipline, yeah. It's applying yourself. I will say I had an intrigue in all of this kind of that kind of mind over matter, and I was doing food and sleep deprivation and survival training in high school. I was just interested and fascinated with that concept that you can push yourself further than you think you can.
You pushed yourself to your edge.
Yeah. So, and that's following the kind of the synchronicities in life. Strangely, it led me into the military, but under a lot of those terms that it was expanding that concept of mind over matter and going inward with it and realizing I have a self that I can over matter.
The entertainer warrior. Uh-huh. Well, so you told me a story at the party, at the event, that you were trying to get into some festival, but somehow they didn't quite recognize your talents. So you would be outside in the parking lot where people were camping, and I'll let you tell it.
Yeah. Well, this is actually, I am a street performer, and if anyone's ever been or attempted it, I think everybody in the world should try it. Just break out in song by the in the fruit aisle at the grocery store. Like, why not? This is the kind of the evolution of being a street performer. You have to overcome your own sense of self or duty to society that I have to follow the rules and for some reason not do this right now.
Oh, wait a second. We're not supposed to sing in the fruit aisle?
I don't know.
So
For everyone who says, I can't do that, yes. It's their belief system. But that's what's, street performing. The hardest part is picking a spot and declaring, I am now a performer. I'm walking around in society as a person. No, now I'm a performer. And I'm actively demanding the attention of those around me. To make that kind of statement and overcome yourself to just declare that. Some people, I think, have it easy, but I'm a shy guy.
You're shy. I have played cello like on the mall and stuff, and people would throw money into my case and mm-hmm. say, take some lessons.
Oh.
Ooh, okay.
Well, you asked me about Coachella. So I took the opportunity. I was in a circus troupe as their primary clown. And at festivals around the world, at night, they would shut down the festival grounds and push all the people out into the campgrounds. But I was always camped in with the other performers. So, and I always wanted to know what's going on out there. So I would go and just go with my ukulele, and I'd get crews of people listening to me sing and play. And I'd bring, as different years went on, I'd bring more and more gear, battery powered amp, and I'd get like a couple hundred people at 3 a.m. chilling with me because there's nothing else to do. And the security guards started liking it because it was like, well, they're at least not out there causing trouble. They got a place to go. And
they're not dying of heroin overdoses. They're listening to Super Tall Paul.
I mean, it's sweet, and I'm getting engagement, and people are clapping and getting up and singing with me. And it was very, like, very sweet. I asked those people, if you like this, I call on you to talk to them. Like, send them emails and say, I want this to be sanctioned. And it worked.
The kings of Coachella are the people that you can't actually, they're no people. They're actually like gods on the mountain. But well, anyway,
they're just a voice.
They came down just and voice. Anointed yes. you. Uh-huh. You shall do this and we will allow you.
I now. Did. And they will allow us now. And they did. And we got to do that for over a decade. We were the late night, the jive joint. We were the late night option.
And you said you would perform for 6 or 8 hours?
Yeah. Our motto what? For 4 nights of every festival weekend would be midnight to sunrise. Yeah.
How does somebody, you would sing and juggle and unicycle?
Well, so the jive joint is a larger version of the evolution, I guess, of me. It all started with Helios Jive, was my live electronic acid jazz band, which I have a couple songs for you to see. We're going to be releasing soon.
We will play Helios Jive after the interview. And sure. I just played Alakazam on my DJ show in a dream, mm-hmm. who is a part of Helios Jive.
That's Rich Alec. Yeah, it's all coming around.
Oh my God.
It really is right now. So Helios Jive had a street performance troupe that I put together, which was actors who were willing to come out of the safety of the black box and do that on the street with me and create scenes. And some of us were also clowns and circus troupes, so we were doing the kind of audience interaction and teaching each other how to put all that together. That was a troupe called Suddenly Dapper that started a night called the Jive Joint so that they could do their kind of our zany kind of improv that involved like theatrical lighting and video and cameras and tons of props and costumes, quick changes, and but all improv. And that's what the Jive Joint is a group of people.
You know, it's hard to entertain people. It's for 5 minutes on stage to hold people's attention, but for 8 hours, you really have to bring it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the layperson realizes mm-hmm. how much energy you have to conduct mm-hmm. to hold other people's attention, because there's like a lot, people can do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And anyway, well, good for you for figuring that one out. And well, so what's the dream, super tall Paul? I mean, do you want to be like a super big celebrity in Hollywood or world musician, or what is it? Where are you going?
Yeah,
where does this
well,
lead?
I am first and foremost an artist, and I'm really just coming to terms with that. All the good and the challenging that come with like just living that perspective, people that it affects in your life. I'm very grateful that I have such a grateful attitude to have been able to make life be this for me. I'm very grateful that I'm not stuck to one thing, even though everyone said you should pick that one. From the beginning, my vision was always the gestalt. I'm like, I don't want to be a master at any of these things. I want to make this thing. I want to learn all these instruments, not to their capacity, but to the sounds and the textures and the chord progressions that I like, so that I make that kind of music. So I don't need to dive deep into any of these things. I can just dabble, and every bit of learning that you get from kind of deconstructing a system teaches you ways of looking at all the other systems and deconstructing those. And I was just, I've always felt like I'm an example of what's possible. So that's what the show Jive Joint is all about, is Super Tall Paul, the host, standing on the front porch of our little house. Everyone who comes to the show, it's just after hours. You can come, you can go. Is it on the map? I don't know. Is this place supposed to be here? So the people enter through our little white picket fence and come in and sit down in our front yard. We play on the fact that some people won't cross that threshold. We call them in the nosebleed seats. But we got our committed audience in here. Like, I bring attention to how brave you were to just walk through that threshold, and like, you're in here with us. It's us. We're in here together. I can't guarantee you folks out there on the outside are having the same experience we're having in here, but we love you anyway.
You're kind of this storybook character come to life, Super Tall.
Yes.
You
yes.
are.
I'm a pop-up and book.
I will tell you, your pop-up book. In this show, I really focus on people like you, this emerging talents, or maybe very developed talents, maybe not the celebrity people, the star people that official media dubs, you know, legitimate talent up there. But particularly in LA and California, there's just tremendous talent that's maybe not quite recognized on those big upper level orbits, but there's so much there. Like, yeah. these are the people I love to feature. Like, the real creative geniuses and lights around. And maybe what you do doesn't fit in a nice, tidy package that can go onto some kind of TV show that people know what to do with. But here you are, just like powerful, creative force, very imaginative, kind of out of the dream world. And, What does the world do with somebody like you?
Yeah, you keep inspiring me, so I can inspire you, disseminating creatively all that we can do. So I am live streaming. You talked about that with what would they know what to do with you? You know, that's very true. It's hard to sell TV. Straight improv. The Jive Joint has developed through the years as street theater to learn how to incorporate and actually make the impetus of the scenes and things happening be from the audience, but not from a standpoint of asking directly, give me some suggestions. I want a relationship or a occupation. They just look at you and we'll all just mirror or be the people who are in the audience. You crossed the threshold. Oh, didn't you know? By coming with an earshot of me, you've signed a contract. Suspend disbelief.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Well, there are these creative lights that
explode, and it, often there or we're ignored, or maybe sometimes even attacked. But then something happens, somebody breaks through eventually. I mean, look at Cirque du Soleil. It was just a bunch of clowns in, what, Montreal or so? Mm-hmm. And then somebody went, oh, this is a thing. You know, like the next wave of creativity comes from somewhere. It's not the same old thing we've already been seeing all the time. It's somebody doing something new and provocative and intense. And then hopefully it's not posthumous success. Oh, no, not posthumous success after I die. How about when we're still alive, right? Eventually somebody like goes, oh, there's some energy here. Maybe this is like the next new thing, you know? And if you're the person who discovers the next new thing, then you become rich. So there are people like looking for that too.
We're in a special time when the tools that required us to need those people have been made affordable to where we can do things without them. That's what I was leading back to with the stream. I've been doing a live stream on Twitch.
Under what name?
That's twitch.tv/supertallpaul.
Easy to find?
Easy to find,
and your website, by the way?
supertallpaul.com.
Okay. You've been doing these Twitch feeds.
Yep.
So you don't need intermediaries.
No.
You can do it yourself.
Yeah, we'll do our own TV show, and we have, and at the festivals, we do go through all around as characters, shooting each other, having interactive segments with people in front of iconic art and stuff. We bring it back, edit it, and have it ready to be on the big screen in our big theatrical show at night. And it's magic for people to see themselves on the screen from earlier today, or their friends, or, oh, I was over there earlier. There's something, that a synergy that creates. And then we are able to generate this, like, a goofy, but like, we're like a kids club. We're all in it together kind of a feeling.
Isn't that cool?
It's so sweet. It's so sweet. The audience is really open to getting nostalgic with us. And that's what we try to push into that ooey gooey, cuddly, lovey, just like, oh.
Again, like, why should entertainment all be about this delivered product from some kind of corporate entity? Why can't it be kind of bottom up, grassroots? Why can't everybody be part of the show? Mm-hmm. Obviously, at some level, it's boring if everybody's part of the show, but maybe if you're good enough at producing and engaging people, then everybody can be entertained. That's, and that's you.
Yeah, honestly, so I'll tell you, Super Tall Paul is kind of like, I was influenced by lots of different kind of bumbling fool kind of characters growing up. I felt like I identified with that, like, big oaf kind of like bumbling, stumbling, knocking things over, breaking chairs. Like, these are all things, accidentally hurting people. That's kind of a life that I've lived.
Any names?
Gomer Pyle.
Okay.
Those kind of characters that just somehow they're meant to fail, but somehow they always come out ahead.
Tennessee and, Ernie Ford. Maybe mm-hmm, that's before your time.
Mm-hmm.
So Jackie Gleason was kind of like that too. Mm-hmm, again, mm-hmm. This is like 50s or 60s. Mm-hmm, I'm older than I look.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a Japanese swordsman called Zatsuichi. All my friends would be into like Western, but he was this bumbling blind masseur who had this sword.
Oh, I think I've seen that.
Zatsuichi, uh-huh. The sword would be in his cane, and he was like the top master swordsman, but during the day, this bumbling kind of jolly guy who helped people. And I totally related to him. That's, I felt him so much. I'm a massage therapist myself these days. So.
Okay.
And a master swordsman. Just don't tell anybody. But well, so you were attracted to that kind of outsider character that was very endearing and humble and transformative.
Yes. Uh-huh. I liked the idea that they were the underdog, but they were the winners. Like, as if you need to, like, strive to be the best at everything. It's like, no, even that guy, especially that guy, oftentimes because of his attitude, he was happy to just be part of things, you know? And, like, I was that guy in my whole stint in the military. They had no idea what to do with me. I was jolly, happy, just like, Newman, go clean up the the toilet. I almost said I wouldn't cuss. I almost cussed. He said, go clean the toilets. I'd be like, sure thing. Yeah.
You know, right. I'm punishing you. Like,
I'm happy to be anywhere I am. I there's a nice echo in there. I'll go beatbox for the next hour, you know?
Oh, you rebel.
Oh, they couldn't figure me out.
They tried to break them.
Yeah.
So funny. That's iconic. Well, another thing I don't have on my show are people who are like contrived or trying to put on some kind of appearance of art. A lot of social media is filled with that. It's just people wizzle, you know, like flapping their arms or like, look at me. But I don't know, as an entertainer, as an artist, shaman kind of person, it rings so hollow. I'd much rather see some kind of clown on stage stumbling around and dragging people on, you know, mm-hmm. like some genuine, like heartfelt thing than mm-hmm. somebody putting on this big put on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the put on's been done. You can turn on the computer and see clip after clip of amazing put ons. What people are missing and don't get to see is the person who you from the audience are like, aw, rooting for you, and when you make it, you're like, oh shoot, oh, and they're like, yay.
When you may, they're rooting for you because they feel like there's something sincere about it, yeah. and it has heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all just some creative thing mm-hmm. to try to get you famous, and that never does. We found it right now. Mm-hmm. We found it. Where you're heading to is a place of heart and transformation mm-hmm. and inclusivity and bringing people Absolutely. In.
Yeah.
And that's actually the future. It's mm-hmm. not just like somebody flashing a bunch of lights and waving their arms and saying, look how special I am. Mm-hmm. That's old. Everybody
like
that. Does that. But what really is compelling and what's like missing is depth and kindness mm-hmm. and having people be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, at your level. I call all of my shows an at your leisure experience because I'm here to do what I do and I'm going to do it the best I can. And I'm going to try to accommodate everyone. Make my joy is to make people like feel comfortable, kind of like you like to do, make people feel comfortable so that they're free to express. And I say, But the leisure part is on you. I need to know what I trust that you know what you need to do to have a good time here. So if that means coming or going, that's fine by me. You know, almost I call it the cold filter process. And then when people do get up and leave, sometimes I'll like stall. This is kind of the street performer in me, creating uncomfortable situations as part of my prerogative to almost move the social experiment that we've all agreed on by coming in this space together. The next moment that happens, we just trust that it will, because something does. Whatever that is, it feels so much better than what we were all experiencing in that moment, because nothing brings an audience together better than a shared uncomfortable moment. And it's a unified experience, like electricity just went through everybody at the same time when that moment hits, and there's a unified exclamation of some sort or hilarious laughter. None of it would make sense if you mapped it out, you transcribed it. This is what they said. This is what happened. It's because you were all focused on this moment together, and it was uncomfortable, but you all were forced, because I've got the mic and I say so, but you entered the threshold, and so you agreed to the contract. We're going to be as uncomfortable as I'm allowed and willing to make this be. And knowing that next moment that happens is just going to be like the funniest, most joyful thing we've ever experienced. And why? And I'm shaking my head, I don't understand. And they're trying to explain their friends later. And he did this, and I don't know, you had to be there because it related to this other thing. And they're just like mm-hmm. lost on it, you know?
I love what you're saying. And it has a lot to do with breaking pattern and breaking habit. Mm-hmm. And if you can break people out of those mechanical, robotic modes,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of playfulness and creativity there.
Mm-hmm.
But in my opinion, it's best done by people who have good intentions. And mm-hmm. there's a gentleness to it, because out there's so much humor trying to happen by humiliating people, mm-hmm. by punking people, mm-hmm. by embarrassing people. And I just hate those kind of programs because mm-hmm. it makes everyone suspicious mm-hmm. and it makes everybody defensive and like, I don't want to participate with this because they may be just trying to sell a product or get a laugh at my expense. Mm-hmm. I can't stand that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I can't stand the competitive entertainment shows mm-hmm. where you're singing or dancing as a competition mm-hmm. because I don't know, the vibe, a lot of people like this, but the vibe is so awful. But what you're doing is kind of the opposite of mm-hmm. that. There's no humiliation, or if it is, it's in the lightest, most gentle way to kind of get people to have fun, and there's nothing competitive about it. This is really, to me, the kind of art that people honestly want and is really missing. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of that commercial junky stuff. Mm-hmm. And just to get a little lofty, I think society in general is just struggling with so much suspicion and positionality and defensiveness. There's so many bunkered down people. It's actually through the arts, particularly if it's goodly, has a good heart, is kind in nature, can just break down all that harshness. And here we're suddenly like kind of playing with people who we may not have liked before. And Super Tall Paul here is getting us to, I don't do whatever you're getting us to do, you know?
Yeah.
But what a medicine in such a sweet, like, you don't even realize it's happening. And mm-hmm. suddenly you're playing, having fun. And you know, you're singing with that person who you couldn't stand absolutely. Earlier in the day, right? Mm-hmm. What a like a moment of magic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, that's why I say I didn't finish the contract that I state. I tell people, you know, there's a legal element to this show, and I need to get this clear, that by coming within earshot of me, you've signed a contract to suspend disbelief, thereby creating a new reality that we all get to call magic, the very definition of such a thing. It's not about me, it's about what you bring. That's the whole special thing. I could do this all day long in my house, and I often do, but the special thing today is that you guys are here. And let me be clear, in this very special, strange circumstance, look, your left, right, all around, I'm going to go so far as to say I don't think anything like this exactly will ever happen again in the universe of time. And then I get a little tear, and I say, that's what makes this next moment so special. And I thank them for their time and space, that quadrant measurement we so eloquently call now, as if you think about it, that's all you really got to give in life, and you guys are giving it fully. So this is an art installation in motion where you guys are the fuel of this ship. Sit back, relax, keep the tray tables down, but definitely buckle up because we're going to go on a ride together.
Well, we've gone from the warrior entertainer to the entertainer shaman magician.
Musician. I have a segment called Musician or Magician. It's so stupid. Yeah. Super Tall Paul.
Super Tall Paul. Any closing words?
Well, thank you, Mystic Pete. It's very nice to the measurements that we see in life. You are a person who is, as a name, has been just kind of always there in my presence. I knew who you were, a person. That surely that's a person. It's very neat to, after all of these years of seeing that name come around, be here with you having a conversation, and I'm just, yeah, very grateful for it.
SuperTallPaul.com, SuperTallPaul, all over social media.
Yeah, all over. I got YouTube, SuperTallPaul, and yeah, if you, we definitely could get some more help on our Twitch. We want to get open up ourselves to that community more. It's the live element. We're experimenting now with all of these live elements that we kind of cultivated through the years by literally logging 10,000 hours playing with audiences and at various places. We're deconstructing those things and finding ways to do it digitally and making fun, you said earlier, breaking down social constructs that we all know, starting there, but then twisting it a little bit. It's a little bit trippy. The game is to get you a little bit, whoa, this, I don't know if I can handle this. But it, yeah, bends and twists reality, but then it it turns it up on its face and pokes fun at it, and we're all just laughing because it's all silly and stupid.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I was born in Canton, China, southern China, in 1948, just after the war. And since I was a baby of that era in China, you know, it was a very difficult time. And my parents had me late in life. My father came to make his fortune. He went the way of Cuba, and then he came to Massachusetts. And my mom was still in China. Usually the husband goes abroad and then leaves the family behind. And so my mom was there. This was after World War II. People fled to Hong Kong. So I was 3 years old when we went to Hong Kong. And in Hong Kong, my mom was there and we lived together. But she was called to come to America. And in 1952, she came. I was 4 years old. So she left me behind with her good friend. And so she took care of me. And of course, it was very difficult. But it had to be because, you know, when you're a baby, when you're a woman, you're not worth much. So my father sold my birth papers because it was worth some money. And so because of that, I didn't have identity. And so I couldn't come with my mom. And so my mom had to leave me. And I knew she was leaving, but I didn't want to give her a lot of trouble. So I was very sad, and I had no idea when she was going to see me next. But the lady she left me with was very nice to me. She was a young widow, and like all people in Hong Kong, they want to do better. So when an older gentleman came to Hong Kong, she took the opportunity to go with him. He was searching for a wife. After my friend left, my parents had to scramble and find someone else to take care of me. So they found this family of six kids, and this family was very different. I was like their little maid. I had to do a lot of the laundry and whatever, and they didn't really care for me because they had six children, and they probably just wanted to take me because they knew my parents would send money, so they took the money. Even though the husband was very nice, the mother was a terrible woman. And if you thought she was terrible, her mom, who used to visit, was horrible. We used to dread her coming. So I lived with them for about 3 years. And I was hungry a lot of times. And I slept on a hard plywood near the door. And I could feel the rats come running up and down. As a kid, that's how, you know, it's kind of normal. And you don't think, oh, wow, yuck, you know. But that was how I lived for a few years with them. And then shortly after that, I had an uncle who used to come. He came into the scene, and he was taking me to immigrations. And I didn't know why, but I had to go to immigration. They would ask me questions. My mom, who had come to America, she was going crazy because she left me. And she was having hallucinations. So somehow they had to get me to America. But I didn't have my papers. So what they decided was to concoct a story that I was the orphan child. I had lost my parents in a junk. Somehow it sink, and I was the only survivor. I don't know how this story came about, but that was the story. So they would interview me, and I would go there, and they would ask about this. So every time they asked me about my mom, I would start crying, and they couldn't go anywhere with me. So I remember the lady said to the other people, oh, don't ask her anymore. And they just gave me some candy to entertain me. So I didn't really have to answer too many questions. So anyway, I was so happy. I'm going to America. And we finally arrived in Boston. And my brother was there. And so I remember my mom, my father was there, and a young girl named Betty. And they were there to pick me up. I was so happy to be in America, to be with my mom. However, it was not a happy childhood because, you know, when you're a girl in that era, you're nobody, really. And my father treated me like nobody. And that was the first time I ever met him. I never saw him. He was like a stranger to me. And my parents did not have a good marriage. In fact, they hated each other. And that hatred, he sort of hated me because of he didn't get along well with my mom. So there was always this terrible inharmony between them. My only salvation was school. I loved school because to be home and in that environment was not pleasant. And then my brother got married. He went to Hong Kong and got married to a young woman. From the moment she came, she demanded the business. She wanted the restaurant because the restaurant was doing well now because we had moved. So she demanded the restaurant and she got it. And my mom was very sad because that was the end of me. You know, I was going to get nothing. What can I do? I'm 10 years old. You know, you're at their mercy. And the reason why my father relinquished it so easily is because in the Chinese culture, your oldest son is supposed to take care of you. And that's what he thought. They would look after him. I was like, not really wanted. So when I became of college age, I got accepted into almost all the schools because I was such a great student. I wanted to go to UCLA. And so that was it. That was goodbye and good riddance. And the minute I came to California, I felt very sad, but I know to survive, I had to do it. When I look at my life now, I do lead a charm life. Got my MBA. I'm so proud of my kids. I don't think they really had, I had anything to do with the success, both of them. I'm very proud. I'm so grateful because for whatever reason, I had to go through so much stuff in order to be where I am. So maybe it's okay because what I am today, I became because of all my past.
Ooh.
Now,
that's good.
Yeah,
well, a lot of this material.
Coming to the end of the show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. We started today's show with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Collins Warren. Then I interviewed Super Tall Paul. Right after the interview, we heard music by him called That's It, THATZIT. That's by his band Helios Jive. Then some recordings of him playing the ukulele. Just a guy singing in my living room on a Wednesday morning. Also, a story by May Chandran, presented to me by the Passionistas Project. You can find out more information by going to thepassionistasproject.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week. Misty Pedo! Ooh.